Okay, so here we go. We're going to start. I want to share with you something that for David and Henry is going to sound somewhat, I don't want to say familiar because that wouldn't be fair, because then it would be like a complete like repeat for them. So it's not intended and shouldn't be. Maybe one little thing will be a repeat. Tuesday night, we're slowly going through the Megillah. And one of the cool things about going through the Megillah slowly is you kind of begin to uncover a lot of things that are missed. So one of the things I think that's key to understanding in the Megillah, and I've definitely said this before, so this is nothing new, is that because of when the Megillah was written, they had the ability to message and reference things from other places in Tanakh. And often the question that we as the reader have to ask ourselves is why? Right? If we have a story that's so clearly embedded textually into this story, then there has to be a reason why that's happening. And we have to ask ourselves what the reason for that is and try to see what we could learn from one to the other. So what I want to do tonight is I want to take a look at a chunk of Perek Bet. And my hope is that it's a story that probably we won't in our mind be like, oh my gosh, that story is jumping off the text, you know, at me. But I think when we look at the two stories side by side, we might find that there is something really interesting going on in it. So that's sort of what I hope we'll be able to pull off in our time tonight. So let's get started. So after all of this, when the king's anger subsided, he remembered Vashti, one. He remembered what she had done, two. And he remembered what he had decreed, or what had been, they decreed, Aleha, on her. So that is, that's our first pasuk. So the Mefarshim all wonder, like, what is it that they, what was it that he remembered about Vashti? So it seems as though the consensus amongst most of the Mefarshim is that he remembers her beauty, right? Vashti was a beautiful woman, and he realizes, wait a second, I don't have that anymore. So pasuk bet, vayomru nari hamelech mishar tav, yivakshu lamelech na'arot betulot tovot mareh. So the nari hamelech, and that's, I think, an important phrase there. The nari hamelech, the young friends of the king, so what do? They say, let's find for the king na'arot betulot, young virgin girls, tovot mareh, that are good looking. V'yafkeid ha-melech pekidim b'chol medinot malchuto, and the king will appoint messengers throughout the land, in all the different provinces. V'yikpetzu akol nara betula tovat marel shushan abiral beit hanashim el yad heges tris ha-melech shomer hanashim benaton tamrukehem. And what will they do? They'll put him in the house of the women, which is under the control of Hege, who is the Sris Hamelech, and they'll be given their all the different spices and all the different perfumes that they need. The Hanara Shartitav Beine Hamelech Timloch Tachad Vashti, Vaitavadavar Beine Hamelech Vayas Kain. And so the girl that will find favor in the eyes of the king, she will rule instead of Vashti, and it's good in the eyes of the king. Now, what's interesting is, and I think next week we'll probably have a chance to take a look at this, but they're saying, like, what they're hoping for is a very superficial relationship. Whoever is good in the eyes of the king, right? But if you remember, what's the greatness of Esther? It's not only that she finds favor in the king's eyes, which I'm not even sure that's the exact language, Balei Kriya could, you know, correct me, but I think it's Vatisachein Vachesed Beinei HaMelech. So it's not exactly. Mati, I saw you turned on your volume, so.
Vatisachein Vachesed
Defanav. Oh, so it doesn't even say Leinei HaMelech, right? So it's not. It doesn't even hit the eyes of the king, so that's good. But also, it says that he loved her. But this is not what they're saying, meaning they're setting this up. It's not meant to be love. It's really more meant to be lust. And yet in the end, what's amazing about what Esther pulls off is that Esther somehow accomplishes so much more than they're hoping for. So there is a great reference here that I think is important to note. But sorry, David, Henry, and Srilly, you're like out of this game. You can't answer that this question. But what story does this have a lot of words from? V'yafked, Hamelech Pekidim, V'yikpitzu, Titav Be'enei Hamelech. Anybody?
Can you answer it?
All right, wait, hold on. So I thought I heard someone other than Srilly first, so we'll give someone a chance before Srilly says it, yeah? No? I find Srilly, David, Henry, you guys are welcome to pipe in.
It's the interpretation of Paro's dreams with Yosef's advice on how to save Paro by gathering in the excess food for the 5 years and the whole plan and all that stuff.
Right, so I just feel like that's something that I never really noticed before. But having seen that this year, I just feel like that's something that's important to note. So Rabbi Yonatan Grossman says that that's a connection to Yosef in order to show us that Yosef was collecting or telling Paro, we're collecting grain, which will sustain mankind. And Achashverosh is doing the same thing for women, which won't sustain mankind. Maybe it'll sustain the king. It's a very subtle knock on the king. But if you were reading this in ancient Persia as a Persian, which I don't know if the full text was available, but let's just assume that you did read it, would you kind of hear that like sarcastic undertone? You'd probably miss it if you were like a Persian, but if you were like a Jewish person who was familiar with Bereshis, right, that might like echo a little bit. But okay, that's not the story that we're going to go with. Any questions on those four psukim, though, before I continue?
I have a question.
Yeah?
Do we have any idea if Achashverosh had children with Vashti?
With Vashti? I mean, they were married long enough that they could have. Right?
I'm wondering if his remembering Vashti maybe remembered the mother of the children.
Yeah, it's a great question. I have no idea. Okay. Any other questions on these four psukim? Okay. So let's flip ahead to Yud Bet. Right, we're skipping. I purposely skipped the psukim of Esther in the middle because for the purpose of tonight we don't need those psukim. And when it came time for each of the women to come before Achashverosh, right, after the law of the land that they had been fulfilled, right, there was a law in the books of Persia, and it's important to note that it uses the word kedat just to mock, again, the Persian society that they lived in that required a law on the books that said, Shneimasar Chodesh, that each girl had to be there for 12 months. Ki chen yimlu'u yimei mirukehem, shishach adashim b'shemen amor, v'shishach adashim b'besamim, uv'tamrukeh anashim. They spent 6 months in spices and 6 months in other spices, 6 months in oil and 6 months in spices.
Were they pickling them?
I don't know. I mean, I cannot even imagine like what that means to be bathed.
Only the green ones.
Right. So I don't know. So I would ask the question, like if you used Yud Bet as a judgment on Achashverosh, right? How would you judge him?
Superficial.
Okay.
It's all about the image.
Right. Okay. Excellent. Anybody else?
A lot of girls to go through. It's going to need time. I mean, it sounds inappropriate, but it's a lot of girls. You know, all these people from the entire kingdom.
Right. Meaning, and I think it takes him, there is a timeline in the Megillah. It takes him a while. I think it might be like a couple of years till he gets through them. So you're talking about like 1,000 girls? And those are.
Start for a year.
Right. Yeah, there is a.
Start for a year.
Right. Yeah. There is a break. That's true. But once it starts, it takes a couple. So let's just say the whole thing took even 2 years. That means that he went through 700 plus girls. And that's only the girls he got to. And the amazing thing is, it's not like it's over when even when he chooses Esther. I think it continues.
He commits Bisolosheness, I think.
Yeah. Right, say that one more time. Sorry.
I think it says, "Yeah, he commits Bisolosheness." I guess with the backups. I don't know. Right after Esther becomes queen. It's
right at
the next
passage
after that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Great. So it just seems crazy. Like this. I don't know. So like, you want to use superficial. It's a lot of girls. Yeah. Those are all fair points. Anybody else? So I wonder what the reaction to this would be, but. Is it possible to suggest that there's a certain generosity to him? Meaning the same way at his party, everybody had an open bar and you were able to drink to your heart's content as per your custom. So if you're a heavy drinker, that's great. You'll drink heavily. If you're a light drinker, you'll enjoy the food without the alcohol. Nobody was forcing it down your throat. Is it possible that this would be another example of his extreme generosity, that he allows all the women unlimited access to whatever they wanted, especially the next pasuk, whatever she asked for, she got, right? Whatever she needed, there was nobody that stepped in her way. I don't know. What's your take on that? Like it? Not really.
I don't think it's generosity as much as it's not generosity. He's doing it all for himself, being quite selfish.
Through
all these strange women, and they might not be so pleasant, smelling, because. They're coming from all different classes and walks of life. He's not doing it for them.
Uh-huh. So, right, it's self-serving. Meaning his officers, right, these pekidim, go around and they pick the women on potential, right? That girl looks like she should be, beautiful, but I don't know if that's a slam dunk. And certainly, if you're in a palace with no air conditioning in Persia and you're the lady that won the lottery and you got July, right? Longest day, shortest night, hottest climate, right? It's not going to be so pleasant. So that's the way to guarantee that the person gets the best shot at it. Okay. Anybody besides Steve not loving that?
I think it's also a test. They're being watched. So everything they ask for, everything they demand, everything this, it goes back to the king. He knows exactly what their personalities are before he ever meets them.
I mean, that makes perfect sense because the king is incredibly paranoid, right? So like, as a paranoid king, it would be like the perfect thing to be like, okay, this is what I need. I need you, Hege. I want you to keep a book of everything that every girl got. And this way, when they come before me, I'll be like, oh, she liked that? Forget it, not interested. Okay, definitely a possibility. So I didn't love the idea that this is a proof of generosity, meaning I think the party is over the top, and I think you could make the case that the party does show that Achashverosh has a generous side. I don't know, like, these girls are being held captive for life. So, like, it's hard to see the generosity in there. And if there is, it's almost like a twisted generosity that that's how it comes. But, okay, that was a Grossman's thought.
I don't know what the culture was at the time in terms of if, you know, if it may have been just, like, a desirable gig to be part of a harem. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess what the upside would be if you're taken from, like, the poorer, like, you know, sectors.
You're taken care of.
Right, you're... Right, but on the other hand, like, that's it. If you're one of those girls that the king, because it says in the Megillah later that if the king, you know, called a girl by name, that's how she came back. But if not, like, that was it. She was done. So if you're one of those girls that, like, the king was like, you're like a scoop of vanilla, like, you're never getting a second chance. So now you might be living life in. In luxury in the palace, but on the other hand, like,
it's kind of suffocating.
Right, like you have no companionship other than the other miserable girls in the harem. So I don't know. I guess, like, in the sense that these girls are chained for life, I think that's not necessarily a great possibility. Okay.
But I think you're saying that with the eyes of a 21st century person. You know, it's, if you're talking about, you know, hundreds, even hundreds of years ago, life for women was not pleasant, and there was always the parents' goal was to have them out of the house. Another one less mouth to feed, and if they married up, great for them.
They're not married up there. Something.
Right. So I guess, like, from a socioeconomic standpoint, like, this is like a step up, but from, like, a quality of life, maybe social, emotional, right? Maybe not. But I Steve, I hear you. I think that often when we read something from the perspective of today, it's a little bit different, right? Like, we can't imagine that kind of lifestyle, but someone who is dirt poor might not be so upset by that. Okay, fair. All right, so let's introduce what story this is similar to. So I want to turn to the beginning of Malachim Aleph. By full admission, one of my favorite prakim in all of Tanakh. So when Rabbi Grossman makes the connection, which I then Googled and did not find many other people, but I think Rabbi Et Shalom also referenced the connection between them. Let's take a look at this story, because we're certainly going to see that words are very similar. The king David is old. He came in his days, and he was covered in his clothes, and he could not be warmed. So his servants say. And that's also, it's a little bit curious, who are these servants? Kind of, I think, a little bit like in Pasuk Bet above, where we have Vayomru Nare HaMelech, and we're kind of like sitting there saying, like, who are those Nare HaMelech? So these servants say, Yivakshu Laduni HaMelech Nara Betula, let us find for the king a virgin girl, V'amda Lifnei HaMelech, she'll stand before the king, Utehilo sochenet, and shall be a warming or an aid to him, v'shachba v'cheikecha, and she will sleep in his, and she'll sleep in your, like, belly, v'cham laduni amelech, and king, you'll be warm. Okay, so what they say is that they're looking for what? They tell him, we're going to look for a narab tula, a virgin girl. Now, I don't remember which of the Mefarshim says this, but the question is, why does it have to be a virgin girl? It could be a married girl. And one of the Mefarshim say, well, once she's married, she will not have the same beauty and warmth to her that she would otherwise. But probably from a more practical standpoint, if she's married already, like, she's not going to be in this position. And this is like a, it's a weird position because it's going to be, we're going to find out in the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Dalet rather, that David never sleeps with this girl. So there is no...
Probably he was over on Yichud with her.
Yeah, so like there is...
So he can't be married because then he can't have a married being in Yichud with the king because then she can't go back to her husband ever.
Right, it's like a weird dynamic. I mean, like it's like a quasi-sexual relationship, but not. I can't. So that's the question.
David already did that maybe married woman thing, so I think you're...
Yeah. Right, yeah, he's like, I'm not going down that one again. Okay,
yeah.
So they're going to look for a young virgin girl, and she's going to keep the king warm. So before we go into the figuring out, actually, let's read a little bit more, because I think that we need a little bit more background before we could ask this question. They look around all of Israel for this girl. So they find Avishag from Shunam. They bring her to the king. She's very pretty. Right? They were looking for Nara Yafa, and they find one that's Admaod. And she's an aide to the king. And she services the king. But the Pasuk is very clear. The king did not have relations with her. Now, interestingly, she is not listed as a betula, right? It says v'nara yafa ad ma'od, and they say we're going to look for a nara betula. And even in Pasuk Gimel, when they're doing the looking, there is no indication that that she is a besula. So what do we do with that? So let's just take a look at the last source on the next page. The Abar Ben El. So the Abar Ben El says, "Vine be'etsa timtza shamru yivakshu l'aduni ha'melech nara betula." In Pasuk Bet, we're told that they're going to look for a nara betula. Uvema'asa, right? Amar v'yivakshu nara yafa. And in Pasuk Gimel, when they actually do the looking, so what do they look for? They look for a nara yafa. Ushnei ha'inyanim mit'achdim shaita betula v'yafa. You would think that it's just the same thing, right? Meaning like whatever is missing in one, the pasuk is filling in the other. Meaning in their eitzah, they said you need a virgin girl. And they wanted her to be a betula, but lefishem lo asu nisayon lada betulah lo higira hakatuv shaita betula v'nistapek b'amru yafeh. So the answer that the Abar Ben El gives as to why betula is not there is because they did not go into that depth to try to figure out who she was. Meaning, like they found a girl, she was unmarried and she was young, and they assumed that she was a betula, but they don't know that definitively, because that was not part of the test. Okay, so now, let's just do Pasuk Hey, and then I think we're going to ask the question. V'Adoniyahu ben Chagit mitnaseh le'mor ani amloch. And while all this is happening, Adoniyahu the king lifts up his voice and says, I'm going to be the king. V'yaslo rechev u'parashim, and he makes for himself chariots and riders, v'chamishim ish ratzim lefanav. There were 50 men running in front of him. Okay, so now, what's the connection between Aleph through Dalid and Hey? And secondly, who are the Avadav in Pasuk Bet? Any ideas or any thoughts?
So, yes. Yeah, so the fact that he has his exceptionally beautiful woman and he doesn't sleep with her, even though he can, it shows that he's no longer has any vitality to him. And therefore, he's done. And therefore, Adonio sees that as a weakness and he's going to take over his kingship.
Okay. So who... it's a great thought. So whose idea is this Sochenet?
You mean who's the Avadov?
Right.
or who functioned as Sochanet? Whose idea was it?
That no, the Sochanet is Avishag. We know that. But I'm saying, whose idea was it? It's clearly not David, meaning David was just cold, right? So nowadays we would just get him like a electric blanket, and we would say like that'll like hopefully get the job done. But whose idea was it to suggest, right? Who are the Avadim? Because I think that's a key piece to try to understand the story.
I mean, possible it was a son, Adonia.
Okay, so that's a possibility.
Why does it have to be a complicated question? He had servants. He was the king. It would have to be someone who was close enough to know that he couldn't get warm.
Right. So I guess it gets complicated if we want to ask, is the idea for Avishag agenda-driven? Right, meaning
if you say it is agenda driven, then it's somebody in Adonia's camp.
Right, so if
to weaken the king's position.
Right, or you just say like it's practical. Like king is cold, he's got some servants that spend a lot of time with him and are like, "Wow, gee, this isn't working out so well for you. What can we do? Oh my gosh, why don't we get like someone who is very warm, and young and full of life, and she'll warm you up." Right, meaning like I know that like when I come back from shul in the morning, and it's like freezing outside and my hands are ice cold, it's always nice for me, not for my kids, when I'm like, oh my gosh, good morning, and they're like, your hands are freezing. I'm like, I know, I think it's your face that's freezing. My hands are now nice and toasty. So it's like the same concept, like you could warm up that way off the benefit of someone else. So I don't know, what do we think here? Do we think that it's agenda-driven, or do we think it's, like, practical?
I would think it's agenda-driven, because if they really just thought he was just cold, and you give him a nicer blanket. I mean, you get a bigger fire. Let's get him a young, supple girl to curl up with. Get him a lap dog. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying.
Right, yeah. No, I hear that. All right, so Greg is on the side of agenda, and Surly is, potentially. I'm not 100% sure that Surly feels that way. And Henry seems not. Anybody else?
I'm on the agenda side also.
Okay.
I think it could be, if these are Avada, we don't know if they're similar to the Narim of Achashverosh, but they could be his younger servants who just don't understand the situation, and it's not agenda-driven. They're just trying to find the... That's what they would do. They would lie with a young girl and warm up.
Okay.
Michael, what's the halacha? David would have died. Would the new king inherit his wives?
I don't know. I don't know halachically. What I do know is that the king, that Avishag is considered enough to be the king's property, that when Adoniyahu does not get the kingship, which we know it goes to Shlomo, Adoniyahu makes a play for her. And he goes not directly to Shlomo, but goes to Bathsheba and says, Bathsheba, can you ask Shlomo for Avishag for me? And when Shlomo hears that request from his mom, he says to her, do you know what he's doing? That's how he's going to take the kingship from us. Because she is a concubine or something like that of the king. And if he has her, he's going to be able to make a play for the kingdom. Not so different from what Avshalom does when he sleeps with the king's concubines on the roof of the king's palace for the nation to see. When he does that, he's doing the same thing. He wants it to be clear. It's not that he wants to rape them, but by sleeping with them, he's saying, the king's wives are mine, and therefore being the kingship is mine. I don't know. Does that help?
It sounds like what Achashverosh did on a, couldn't say exactly, but a very similar play.
Vashti
is, well, you know, Vashti is the key to his kingship.
Right.
I mean, he has no royal blood in him, so Vashti does.
There actually is a possibility that he does have royal blood in him. There's a possibility that his father is Belshazzar, who actually kills, Daryavesh, who kills Belshazzar, who is Vashti's father, and then Ahasuerus then becomes the son of the new king, from the new line, the Persian line, as opposed to the Babylonian line. But yeah, no, I definitely hear the similarity there. So, I mean, in terms of wordplay, the similarities are very clear. Yivakshu lamelech, or hamelech, as opposed to Yivakshu lamelech. They're looking for na'ara, na'arot. She has to be a betula, and they're looking b'chol gvul Yisrael as opposed to b'chol gvulot, b'chol medinot malchuto. So they are similar, right? But what's the difference?
I mean, you know, it may have shortcut the narration, but it's a lot less pomp and circumstance, it seems like, with this process.
Yeah.
There's only one person.
You don't know how many they looked at, but even so, but it does, this is what we need. Let's get her gotten. This item is checked off the to-do list.
Right. Meaning we don't know how exhaustive the interview process is.
The time. There's no year here. There's no...
Right. Meaning even if they pick 10 girls, only one is chosen, and the one that's chosen comes before the king. What happens to all the others?
They're free.
Nothing.
Right, meaning they never become property of the king, and therefore they don't become agunos. Now, interestingly, the one person in this whole thing that actually becomes an aguna, which is actually the flip of Megillas Esther, is who? Right, Avishag essentially becomes an aguna because she's property of the king, but the king never sleeps with her. So she's not one of the king's wives in a practical sense. She's never going to have children with the king. And yet, when she's done, she's property of the king, so she never goes free. But at least, the big difference is there's only one girl, right? And as opposed to like this massive, like, hundreds, if not thousands of girls that are taken to the king's palace. So, Rabbi Grossman says that the reason why these two stories are referenced to each other are to show you the contrast. There is another way. Meaning, Ahasuerus didn't have to do it the way he did it. And by doing it the way he did it, what happens? Look what he's doing to all these other girls. And the same way he's collecting women as opposed to collecting grain, it's giving us the David story with the words to remind us that Ahasuerus could have done it in a very, very different way. And had he done it that way, it would have been so much more respectful to women in general. So that's one possible answer of why the stories are connected. But I have my own thought as well as to why the stories are connected. And that has less to do with the girls and much more to do with whose idea it was. So why are the Narei HaMelech suggesting all this? So I want to share with you a medrash that I did share already on Tuesday night, so I apologize for repeating it. But I think it has a different twist. There are seven servants that are responsible for Vashti's disappearance, right? And of course, the most famous of them, if you're not a Baal Korei, is?
Memuchan,
right? We all know Memuchan. And the Baalei Kriya know the others. What happens to those seven? Do we ever hear from them again?
No.
No, we don't.
One of them is Haman,
right, so the Medrash says that Memuchan is Haman. A different Medrash says Memuchan is Haman. And that's just, it's easy because Memuchan does have quite the evil plan for Vashti. And Haman has the same evil personality. But the Medrash, actually, this Medrash, says that we never hear from them again because they're eliminated. And now you have this new crop of officers. Now, who are these advisors? I think someone said this on Tuesday night. Nari HaMelech, the reason why they're the young officers of the king is because there were no old officers of the king because they were all eliminated in Pasuk Aleph when the king calms down and he realizes, oh my God, I can't believe what happened to Vashti. It's all your fault. So he kills those people and now all of a sudden introduces in the new servants.
Except for, according to the Medrash, the one person who was the architect of that idea.
That's a different Medrash. And that Medrash, meaning that Medrash probably would not think that the seven of them got killed. What that Medrash would say is, look, Memuchan was listed the last. And therefore, he's probably the least important of the seven. But because of what he did, look what happens. He all of a sudden becomes the Mishnah Lamelech. So that's one take. This is a different take. So let's just assume that we are the new servants of the king. Where are we at? Would we want that job? Probably not. But now you're the new servants and you're told you got to come up with a fix to the king's problem. What is your biggest fear? Yeah, because what would failure likely look like for you?
Yeah. Elimination.
Right, so if you're the next group of officers, you're thinking to yourself, like, this is a really horrible position to be in, because in all likelihood, right, if this doesn't go fairy tale ending perfect, what's going to happen to me? My head will be on the plate also. So you have to figure out, like, what's going to be your way of getting around this? So here's the.
If they actually had thought ahead enough, you know, the way we were saying before, how long this process took, it's brilliant because you can go years, right? You just wait, you just haven't found the right one yet. So let's keep going. When I say, right, this, even as it is, it probably took at least, we figured, 2 years or.
What do you mean? Right? Then also, they're not picking the winner. The king is right. Picking the winner.
Right. If we set it up.
They can do no wrong. They just have to come up with the process.
Right. They have to come up with a process. And what is that process going to look like? It's not, it should be long-winded. Yeah. King is the one that makes the decision. But what does it keep the king busy with? Right? Like, the king is just going to be busy with that for a long time. And what can we do?
Whatever we want.
So now.
I don't know if they're that sophisticated or they're just a bunch of frat boys who came up with this. But either way.
Yeah. I think you could go 100% either way on it. But I would like to at least theoretically put out there, again, this is my own thought, I could be wrong, that their purpose was, let's distract the king so that we could do our thing and he'll be busy with his thing. And that's, I think, an incredibly strong connection to our story. Who are the Avadav and Pasuk Bet?
Now, this crew.
Right. This is not this part is not my thought. Meaning, it's very clear from the Malbim, and definitely Rabbi Alex Israel has lots of stuff to say on this. It's clear that the Avadav were meant as Adoniyahu's allies to distract the king and to prevent the king from being able to be aware of what else was going on, and that would help Adoniyahu's cause. I'd like to make the argument that that's the connection as well to our story. It references Avishag's story for Adoniyahu, because the Nare HaMelech figure, we just got the king so busy, he's so wrapped up in his own thing, we could do whatever we want, we could run the palace and the kingdom as much as we wish for a long time. Which I think is clear from the Megillah, that who's really running the kingdom? It's not Achashverosh. Achashverosh couldn't even come up with any of this, right? They have to tell him, we're going to find you pretty girls, we're going to put them in here. Like, they take care of the macro and the micro. So now let's take a look at how that works into our story of Avishag. Why do the Avadav set it up this way? So I'm not going to do the entire Malbim, but the Malbim at the very end in V'shachba b'cheikecha says that they make a big deal to do this way, that everybody will know, because it is so uncomfortable if you're one of the king's children, if you're one of the king's wives, right, to come into the king's room and the king is lying with another woman who I would probably venture to say is not dressed, right? Because if she's dressed, then her being a besula has nothing to do with the fact that the king is staying warm. It has to do with the fact that she's wearing a very warm, you know, garment. What's probably keeping the king warm is her flesh. And so if that's the case, if you're any of the king's family members, you can't come in. And if not, the Malbim ends, V'lulei natana navi sheshalacha bat sheva, lo haya David yodea muma, ki hu haya mufrash min ha'am u'mibnei beito. The king was completely isolated. And if not for the fact that Nasan Anavi makes the push, nobody ever would have known. The scheme by Adoniyahu is brilliant. He suggests through the Avadav, let's get Avishag in there. And that isolates the king for a very long time and potentially would have isolated him to the point that David would not have known what was going on. Shlomo never would have become the king. I think it's possible that Achashverosh's servants had the same plan in mind. Their goal was keep Achashverosh out of the picture, isolate him, and we'll do what we want to do. An interesting twist and an interesting possibility, but nonetheless, another like way of trying to understand what's going on with Achashverosh. And that is the goal, perhaps, of his of the Narei HaMelech in choosing this process to figure out who the next king will, who the next queen will be.
That's pretty good that these Narei HaMelech in Persia were a bucky in Malachim Aleph.
No, it's not that they know the story. I'm saying I think it's like strategically it's the same idea.
I don't tease
it. But maybe they knew Malachim Aleph also. All right, there we go.